afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe. Your Captain Joe is up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch broadcast studio on the magical Isle of Vashon once again. After having had to abort the mission last week. Last week, I was at Dulles International Airport, airline code IAD, and I was in a place where I could not broadcast. And so I had to send a signal to Captain O'Brien, who was engineering for me, and tell him that I was not able to come on the air and to put on a previous broadcast, which I know that he did. I hate it when I have to do that, because my promise and my commitment to you, to all of Captain Joe's people, is that I will broadcast live from wherever I am in the world. And with one, two, three, just a few exceptions, I have been able to do that. And we have been together in such places as a canal boat in Amsterdam, in Stockholm in Sweden, and in the dry dock underneath the Coast Guard cutter Polar Star. So for the most part, I have been able to fulfill my obligation and my commitment to all of Captain Joe's people. And when I am not able to do it, I feel it keenly, and I do today. So I am back with you on the magical Isle of Vashon, and I have a little bit of catching up to do and also a couple of things to make all of Captain Joe's people feel just a little bit better about themselves and about the world in which we live. But there are a couple of things that I need to talk about, we need to talk about together before I get to that, where we all feel a little bit better. My greetings today go to all of Captain Joe's people who are alone. I bring this up because in a little bit later in the broadcast, I'm going to talk about a film clip that I watched last night about being alone and being of a certain age. And because your captain is not ever alone, and because I am surrounded by a wonderful group of people who are with me, whether they are actually in captain's quarters or not, or with me in some other way, I am never alone. And so I think that I probably don't have any personal experience about this phenomenon, but I am going to talk a little bit about it because I was so struck by this particular film clip. The medical list today brings with it two deaths, not close aboard, but deaths that are of people of remarkable accomplishment, regardless of your political ideology. The first one, of course, is Jesse Jackson. And it is a considerable interest, as well as sadness, that we report his death, because apparently he had been suffering from a both rare and incurable condition. And I use the word only, he was only 84. The other one is Robert Duvall. The film that I, in particular, attached to him is Apocalypse Now. And all of us who served in Vietnam, regardless of the intensity of our combat experience, can identify with some pieces of the work that Duvall did in Apocalypse Now. And so I am remarking here on the loss of these two people. And I do so with a sense of loss that they are no longer occupying airspace in our world, without regard to whatever their political ideology was, because at this point, it doesn't matter. A couple of things about the other part of the binnacle list is that my friend and colleague, John, who is one of the administrators of the Coast Guard Channel, is continuing to recover as I read his posts on the Coast Guard Channel. And he remains on the binnacle list until I am assured that all is back in battery for all of you gunner's mates out there. And the other one is Bill on the Coast Guard Channel has been having a series of eye injections. And since I have undergone that particular challenge and joyful activity, he is on the binnacle list until he is completed with that series, and let that happen soon. And then there is my shipmate, Josh, who now has had a pacemaker installed. So for all of them and all of Captain Joe's people who are known to me but who I have not declared here on because they've asked me not to, all of you remain as always in the palm of my hand. Your recovery is so important to me and to all of us, which is why we have the binnacle list and why we direct our energies in the direction of those who are hurting and who need some support from their shipmates. Everybody remember what the definition of the word shipmate is? He or she who puts his mates and his ship before himself. Had to sneak that one in. I have to do that every so often. In my own situation, I had a setback this last week. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it is incredibly debilitating. And that is that the drug, one of the drugs that I'm taking, has an effect of fatigue. And when this kicks in, and it has happened now two or three times since I've been on this, and I've been on it now for over a year, and have been taken off of it for a while to see what's going to happen. So when it kicks in, it is all that I can do to get up and feed Sailor and Blossom and clean the litter box. Sailor has not yet learned how to do that, and he's not yet learned how to open the fancy piece cans. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have gotten up at all. It is really a kick in the butt when it happens. I had a full week planned for going to sea with Midori. I had a dinner that I had planned to host, and I had several engagements that I was looking forward to attending, and all of them I had to scrub. So this week, I am doing some catch-up, and at the same time, I am hopefully carrying out some of my new obligations with Mr. Yuck and with the lighthouse at Point Robinson. So it is not yet time to be practicing the flag folding ceremony, nor is it time for the talk. All of you out there know what I mean by the talk. When that time comes, whenever it is, and may it be a long way off, because I've got a lot to do yet. Places to go, people to see, new friends, old friends, friends of family rank, family members. Soon a granddaughter is to be admitted to her nursing degree in Fairbanks, and I am going to that. My next trip is to San Francisco, SFO, Airline Code SFO, for the annual general meeting of the Council of American Master Mariners, of which I am a voting and dues-paying member. And then I have a full dance card of other things that I am going to go to, that I'm going to be a part of, that I'm going to contribute to, and that in which I am going to participate. So I don't have time for anything other than what I am doing. And when I lose a few days, as happened to me this last week, it is both debilitating, it is morale, does not help help the captain's morale, and I regret enormously the effect that it has on people with whom I have made commitments and with whom I have obligations and privileges. So there you have it. That's it for the binnacle list. And now I have to get to one matter which is very saddening and troubling to me personally, and it will be to every wearer of the shield, all of us who wore the shield and wear the shield even today, even if it is only in memory. A much trusted and loved friend and colleague and brother, icebreaker captain, sent me a signal this morning in which he told me, in fact, he gave me a clip from a news outlet that talked about the rupture which is beginning to show between the Coast Guard leadership and the leadership of the Department of Homeland Security. I'm not going to get into, because I haven't read the complete report, I haven't read any official reports, all I've seen is this news outlet report. And so I'm not going to get into the rightness or wrongness of this, but I do have this to say. When these kinds of things happen, and I suppose that they have happened off and on ever since 1790 when we were formed, it is to the commandant of the Coast Guard to stand up straight. If necessary, take one of the bars that contains his four stars and put them on the desk of the secretary and say something like, "Madam Secretary, you don't get to do this to my people. I command the Coast Guard. If you choose not for me to command the Coast Guard, then you may ask for my retirement and you will get it. But in the meantime, I command the Coast Guard, and within the broad policy framework, I will determine the priority of missions. And for me, the top mission is the saving of lives at sea." The first day that I reported to the Coast Guard Academy, you all know how old I was, and took the oath, the same oath that all of us took, I was told then, one of the sayings in the Coast Guard is you have to go out, but you do not have to come back. And then for 4 years, we all learned how to come back. And we learned how to bring back the people that were entrusted to our care, the people that we were privileged to command. In my own case, I commanded 6 different Coast Guard cutters. I know I've said this before many times, but it is a source of pride and great satisfaction to me to be able to say that. And never once did I feel that it was necessary for me to take off my command insignia. There's a little insignia that tells anyone who is looking at my ribbons and other accoutrements on my uniform can tell whether I've commanded at sea, whether I'm currently in command, and whether I've commanded ashore, or whether I'm currently in command. And I have done both. So in all of those years, and I have worked for some very difficult admirals, and I have worked for, in particular, Airedale admirals, wearers of the wings of gold. And in every case where there was some difference of opinion as to how or the way or whether a particular mission should be accomplished, I was always able to rationalize that with my boss. I've never been relieved of command. In fact, I was selected for command over and over again. It is a point of particular pride for me that part of my service reputation was that you did not mess around with Captain Joe's people. If any of them get into any kind of difficulty ashore or afloat, they get returned to the good captain, and he will take care of it. That was not only my service reputation, it was the way that I functioned in all of my commands, afloat and ashore. The privilege of command is just that. It is a privilege. And the fact that I was privileged to command literally hundreds of Coast Guardsmen is one of the great things that I frequently reflect on in my life. So, Commandant, now is the time. I want to hear and see that you are standing up and you are working with the civilian leadership, because nobody believes, none of us professional military people anyway, believe that we should have anything except overall civilian leadership. But when you get into the military chain of command, then that chain of command must be sacrosanct. And it must be followed by each of us who has taken that oath. And for now, that's all that I have to say about all of that. I have a couple of other things to say about, let's see here. On the 23rd of February, 1945, the anniversary of the raising of the flag on Mount Suribachi. And I bring this up because it is part of the Coast Guard lore that we were in every single invasion during World War II. There weren't many of us. There were not enough of us to generate a huge collection of Medals of Honor. We have one, Doug Monroe. There will always be a Coast Guard Cutter Monroe, just like there will always be a Coast Guard Cutter Hamilton. And not a huge collection of Navy crosses. In fact, not a huge collection of much in the way of high-level medal awards. One of the chiefs that I had in my first command had been a first class and then chief bosun's mate in a little FS. Coast Guard manned a whole fleet of FSSs, little 143-foot-long supply vessels that trudged around the Pacific, providing ammunition and other stores for combat troops. Not very glamorous work. Had its own dangers. And yet that was the kind of work that we often did. It's the kind of work that we often do today. I revel in the fact that there are jobs that have to be done that nobody wants to do. I'll do it. I'll take a ship anytime. Commandant, my sea bag is packed. The delivery organization to have my orders delivered is open, awaiting your call. Some of you older hands will remember the word AMVER, A-M-V-E-R. It stands for Automated Merchant Vessel Rescue System. It goes all the way back to at least 1956. and it's still functioning today. And it's a system whereby merchant ships and under the any flag can participate, allow themselves to be included in the system, and when a search and rescue event takes place and there is no Coast Guard facility there, the SAR mission coordinator will interrogate the AMVIR system, and he will see if there is a merchant vessel close to that particular case. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. Off of the Galapagos Island, a fishing vessel sank, and there were 27 people. The Seaways Kenosha was found in the AMVIR database, and she rescued all 27. This particular story is of interest to me because in my first shore job, I managed part of the AMVIR system. And then later on, after I completed my time as captain in Ingham, and then I went to the Armed Forces Staff College, I reported out to San Francisco to run the AMVIR system for the entire Pacific Basin, where I worked for that great gentleman, Admiral Mark Whalen. I've told some stories about Admiral Whalen. And here we are, all of these years later, 70 years later, the system is still humming along. It's still working exactly the way it was designed, and it is still plucking sailors out of the water. It warms the cockles of this captain's black heart to read that particular story. There is a big conference coming up sponsored by the Nautical Institute of London. I am a member of the Nautical Institute of London. I was recruited into that organization by Captain Duke Snyder, Canadian. Icebreaker captain, very well known in the polar community and especially in the icebreaker community and especially in the sub-community of captains of icebreakers. And somewhere Duke and I crossed. We have been back and forth in each other's domains several times over the years, and somewhere we crossed and Duke said, "Captain Joe, why are you not a member of the Nautical Institute of London?" And he was at that time the president. And I said, "Well, Duke, I don't know. Tell me about it." And he did. And he gave me the application form, and I filled it out, and I became a member. It is a relationship which has been, for me, particularly satisfying. And the annual general meeting this year is going to be, and this is going to be the great sacrifice, Victoria, British Columbia. One of the most beautiful cities and enjoyable cities in the Western Hemisphere, in the world. And that's where the Nautical Institute is going to have its annual general meeting this year. And I am going to go to that. The importance of the Arctic is finally coming to some sort of real interest on the part of the American public. We are, of course, an Arctic power, and we share the Arctic basin with a number of other countries, including the Russian bear. And there is a way for all of the conflicts that there are to be resolved. I frequently say that many of these things should be best solved by sailors. People who, in particular, people who have commanded at sea, who have commanded in the deep ice, people who have endured the worst weather that both the North Atlantic and the North Pacific can throw at them. All of these things give you a background of a sense of reality. That if we can survive these things, then we certainly can survive the political ramifications of all that we try to do unto each other. That is my hope. And I intend to be an active participant insofar as whatever the format will be. I don't know that yet. But I'm really looking forward to that whole meeting. So that is the Nautical Institute. It is coming in May, and it will be, O Spirit of Self-Sacrifice, in Victoria, British Columbia. An interesting thing is happening about the Navy's Constellation frigate program. The Constellations are dead. That was an ill-conceived, along with the littoral combat ships and the Zumwalt class of destroyers. Three in a row. And so the replacement is going to be an adaptation of what we in the Coast Guard call the National Security Cutter. I don't call it that. That's, to me, a high endurance cutter. But it's called the National Security Cutter. And they're built by a shipyard called Ingalls down in the Gulf. And they are incredibly able ships. They have a very long range. They can keep the sea for a long time. They're very sturdy. And they have room, space, and stability, room for whatever weapon systems the Navy wants to add on to them. And I just hope, as I come to the end of my time for us together, I just hope that the Navy does not fall into the same trap that they did with the other three that I mentioned. Quickly, I want to talk quickly, and I'm going to talk quickly about this business about being alone. The other day, I guess it was last night, in fact, I was watching a program on YouTube about this gentleman was talking about living alone, and he was, I would say, probably 80, in other words, a youngster. And he was talking about how hard it is, and I'm thinking to myself, well, why don't you go out and volunteer? I can give you a list here on the magical Isle of Vashon of 10 organizations that would love to have you as a participant. I don't know where you live. I did not pick that up, and he didn't tell us. I don't know where you live, fellow, but if there was a place for me to send you a signal, the signal I would send you is to pick yourself up, pet your cat, which he has. He has a white cat. Pet your cat and then go out and make yourself available to any one of a number of organizations that would love to have you. If you are a veteran, and there was no way to tell that, I have a suspect that he was not. But if you are a veteran, then there is VFW, if you are a veteran of foreign wars, and there is the Legion, all of which are looking for people to help them out. So I am looking now at my watch. I see that I am even more than usual up against the end of my time. This is, as always, your Captain Joe. I am on station and watching properly.